think we're ready for a war of our own. As we do our first early review, and I say first because everyone else on the site will kill me if we don't do a big mass review once everybody else gets to see it. The peasants of
the
Star
plebs
Wars
and heathens.
Episode 7, The Force Awakens. I'm Chris.
I'm Ed.
And I am the sound of doom. Yes, it's Richard in the corner. This one's going to be fun, folks.
This is, I don't say this often, but today Richard's going to be a dick. God love you, my friend. Ed, it's really nice to have you back on.
It's good to be back.
Yeah,
we missed you.
Yeah, you're always welcome. I hope you know that.
It's weird. This spot on the couch is still form-fitted to me.
Into
I don't
your
know
shape?
How, yeah.
You left a good impression.
No, that's just because you have generic critic ass.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. It's still moist, too. That's...
No, his ass is much skinnier than most critics.
That is true. Which is not hard, but yours is dramatically more so.
Well, I don't feel like we even have to... And this is a non-spoiler review, by the way. So
absolutely.
We've got to go in because this one's coming out at you know, in like 4 hours on the site, right when they have the embargo lifted at 2:01 this morning, which is the most ridiculous time to lift.
Yeah, it's because it's 12:01 Pacific.
Yeah, but nonetheless,
so I know
technically tomorrow. Yeah,
it's tomorrow everywhere. Right. Apart from China. Or anywhere basic. Or Hawaii.
The three of us got to see the press screening of this thing. And I obviously can't go but so much into the plot. But if you've seen the trailers, you get the general idea about what's going on. We will talk a little bit about what's happening here. This is 30 years after Return of the Jedi. For the first, God, what was it, like 30, 45 minutes of the film or something? We're not seeing any of the original characters in this film.
Yeah,
I mean, it is John Boyega from Attack the Block. By the way, if you don't know what that is, go rent it.
Go watch that
immediately.
Right
Attack
now.
The Block.
Go watch that instead.
Josh.
Don't push me, Sunshine.
You know they're not going to listen to that, even if they think it's going to suck. They're still going to see it. He plays a stormtrooper from the new First Order, which is the thing that, after a couple decades, has largely replaced the Empire after its fall. Oh, spoiler.
We will spoil Return of the Jedi.
We will spoil Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, that's fine. True. I think that one's clear.
On the first day on the job, goes, nope, not for me, and takes off before he's put in a position that he has to kill anybody. He ends up meeting Daisy Ridley, who plays Rey, who is like a desert scavenger type. She goes to a lot of the ships that have been lying there in this planet that's very much like Tatooine, but not Tatooine.
Very much like Tatooine, which is the first of many locations where you go, well, that's very much like something we've seen before, but you've given it a slightly different name just because, well, that's what you do, J.J. Abrams.
Probably a lot of desert planets.
No, let's be honest. Move on. Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Who is like, you know, I mean, like, obviously kind of a mechanic in her own right, because you would have to be to know what parts Steven scavenged from this thing. It was never entirely clear what she was trying to get for the part. She goes to a local trader and they're like...
It was food.
Okay, because...
Oh, yeah, she ate it.
Was it?
Yeah,
okay, I wasn't sure that was the same thing.
Like many things, not clearly shot, not really explaining bits that are happening.
Still plot.
Go on.
You'll get your chance, sir.
Oh, yes, I will.
As well, runs into Oscar Isaac, who plays Poe Dameron, who is a Resistance X-Wing fighter pilot. In fact, the Resistance X-Wing fighter pilot, who's like the ultra badass of the crew. They're like, oh yeah, he's the man. On his escape from the new and improved Death Star-ish type place. Everything. I don't want to say much past that. You get a lot of this from the trailers, but, you know, I mean, obviously the whole crew ends up running into this Han and Leia and, you know, C-3PO and R2-D2, what have you. And that's the extent to which I feel like we can really accurately discuss the details of the plot without feeling like we're really spoiling something.
Well, and the trailers have kind of introduced us to that new crew of characters, but a lot of the mystery still is how the our old friends kind of, you know,
what have they been doing?
Yeah, how they interact with the new young bucks.
Yeah, for me personally, and I'm gonna have to keep saying that because I know Richard is gonna disagree with me about a lot on this, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I loved the way, especially the way, like, Han sort of immediately recognizes something in Rey. You know, I really like that. I love Daisy Ridley as Rey. I thought mm-hmm. she was really great in this. I thought John Boyega had that perfect sort of, like, audience avatar character. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. He's, like, thrown into the mix. He's like, I just want to get the fuck out of here. And it's like, no, there's a whole bunch of shit going on that you need to help with. No, I don't want to do that. So he's basically a little bit of Han and a little bit of, like, a little bit of classic Han Solo, a little bit of something else.
Mm-hmm. John Boyega and his inexplicable American accent. I'm yeah. not quite sure why that was
It is weird in a series that doesn't really care who has what accent traditionally throughout it. You know,
and
it has no effect
on
anything. Why not just let him have his natural British accent?
Which will be much better and much more interesting. It will be an accent you don't really hear in lead parts in modern movies.
It's true.
Yeah.
Except for Daisy Ridley.
Or the prequel.
She has a completely different accent. That's like saying, that's like saying somebody from Tennessee has got an Alaskan accent.
Well, it's
a posh. She has a posh accent. She has received pronunciation, as it is
it's
called.
It's not an American accent.
American and all others.
I was actually kind of surprised with her as that she's been living in the desert. She's basically living in the, like, desert version, like, of a West Virginia planet. that why they didn't give her kind of a southern lilt or something like that, you know? Felt like something like, okay, she's kind of backwoods. You know, I mean, there's probably a director choice.
Yeah.
I don't know where she's actually from or what her nationality is. Do you know offhand?
English.
Is she English?
Yeah, as far as I know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
She's called Daisy Ridley.
She was born in London.
Daisy Ridley. You can't get much more English name than Daisy Ridley.
That'd be weird. They say Benedict Cumberbatch. No, he's from Mexico.
I don't know. Tuppence Middleton is a lot more British than any name I've ever heard in my entire life.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's an Anglo-Saxon term as you can get without actually turning into swearing.
I think that there's only one moment that really took me out of this movie, and it's the first time you see Leia and Han together, which doesn't happen until about halfway through the film. And it's only because you're just struck with how old they are, and so therefore how old you are. You're like, your mortality comes rushing at you like a race car with a bulldozer, like, scoop in the front of it. It's like, Jesus Christ, they're old.
That's funny. See, I'm sitting on the same couch as you, Chris, and I'm going to probably be siding with
you. Go to the safest place.
Yeah. I was actually sitting next
to
Richard.
Don't let Richard talk touch
you. I was sitting next to Richard in the theater. We didn't share a word, but I was like, I like that movie a lot more than Richard. We didn't literally say a single word to each other, but solely based on body language and, like, the lack of sound.
Point where I actually facepalmed a clue.
I didn't see the facepalm, but what I was going to say, though...
on that thought,
yes.
Martin told me tonight that he, at one point after the movie, was in the bathroom peeing next to Richard and was terrified to say a word to him. Was literally scared to speak to Richard.
Well, I mean, and I told him he left his jacket in the cinema as well. Jesus, Martin.
I mean, you
know,
I'm
going to kick your ass, but previously it was all fine.
You don't really want to be talking about it whilst peeing at the urinal anyway.
You never want to talk to a man while you're peeing anyway.
But anyway.
But we're digressing.
I actually found that the moment that I had the biggest issue with was the similar moment. Not when Han and Leia were meeting, but, you know, there's some exposition that's clunky here and there throughout the movie, and especially when Han and Leia are having to kind of catch us as an audience up to what's happened over the last 30 years, and you're like, well, they know this. They're talking to each other. They're telling each other things that they live together, and there was that clunkiness to that.
Oh, agreed. And I think, though, it's funny because I was saying that to somebody else, saying, yeah, there were awkward dialogue moments in this, and they're like going, which Star Wars movie are we talking about? Because honestly, right. You could be talking about any one of the seven.
Sure.
Of those
Absolutely.
Moments, you're like, ew, that was not a great written piece of dialogue right there. And I guess I kind of went, you know what, you have a good point there. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be an apologist at all, but I really did feel like those moments, I was, because I came into this going, I kind of want to not like this.
Mm.
You know, I'm kind of going into this, I hate to admit that. But anyway, sorry, I interrupted you in the middle of your point.
No, that's going to be one of my only real frustrations with this movie. I'm interested in hearing what Richard's, you know, specific frustrations were, but I was definitely swept away and was just kind of happy and giddy and in love, and I had little happy nerd tears, and it was a great experience for me.
I did cloud up at once or twice.
Yeah. And to preface that, I actually rewatched the Star Wars original trilogy for the first time in over 10 years this weekend. I just realized, oh my gosh, it's been literally a decade. And so I'm not coming at this just like this happy fanboy that's just been ready to, you know, be swept off his feet. I was cautiously optimistic, and very much worked for me.
It's funny because I've been describing myself the whole time about this movie as cautiously pessimistic.
Okay,
you know, like, I don't have a hell of a lot of confidence for this,
mm-hmm.
but they are making a lot of decisions like that I do like in technical terms for this. So we'll see. Even though I can't stand J.J. Abrams 99% of the time, I think that obviously those things did not carry over for Richard. Richard, let's give you a chance to just
get out
of
the way.
I know that, like, we could sit here and like, go squee over a lot of the stuff we love for a while.
And we should later.
Yeah, yeah.
No, well, this is the...
All I ask is be cautious of spoilers.
Yeah, I am very extremely cautious of spoilers. Okay. But the thing is, it's really hard to not spoil this film at a certain level because of one thing. You've seen everything. J.J. Abrams, I'm sorry, the guy has no vision. As a director, he has nothing. He brings nothing fresh to the table. He has taken what he has seen in the other films, and this is the same he did with Star Trek. He took what he saw, and he went, I'm just going to remix it. I'm going to turn this thing on its head, and I'm going to take this narrative theme and do something different with it and do something wacky, and now you'll love me. And it's like, there's nothing there beyond that. He is such a one-trick pony. And here, there's every single moment I'm looking at and going, I get the nod. I get the nod. I get the reference you're making. I get what, oh yeah, you've done that. Ah, yeah, look, oh, there's a visual design reference. It means nothing. It's, you know, you talk about semiotics, and you talk about, you know, the sign, the signifier, and the sign. The, you know, that you have this, you have something which means a thing. You know, an item which carries significance. And J.J. Abrams has basically taken all the signs from all the other films and put them together and just wants to basically manipulate your emotions and say, see, I'm bringing this thing back that you liked. But you pull it down 1 inch below the surface and there's nothing there. This is a hollow film.
See, that's... All right, let me...
Let me
retort just that specific point,
yeah.
If you don't mind. I agree with you in the terms of this is Abrams... doing what he does, which is just what you've described, except doing it with what felt to me clearly a lot of other people looking over his shoulder and going, if you're going to do that, it has to actually mean something.
But I don't
it
think
has to actually feel like this it has resonance within the film itself, and in fact, in the context of the idea of the Force and of fate destiny and all that stuff. And
this was
those things work for me for that
they didn't work for me because what I mean the stuff that happens and you're going, have you seen the other films or did somebody explain them? Just show you a picture book and explain some vague concepts. You know, we're seeing Force powers here that you kind of go, what? Hang on, nobody here is supposed to have any training, and yet they are more powerful than anybody in the prequels.
I like that.
I hated that.
It's because the Force is awakening, Richard.
I hated that. I thought that was so clumsy. There were some of the exposition.
But why is it? But that's an assumption that it's clumsy.
This is the first of three films, but
you don't know that this isn't like,
oh, so you're
shit.
Making,
these people are more powerful because they're like it's evolving.
Yeah, I'm definitely.
I got.
Oh,
that from the previous films was like the idea is the strength of the Force evolves through generations.
I've never had that idea before. But there are moments of exposition, which is something you talked about, that weren't simply clumsy or they weren't great lines. They were just bad. Like there's so many structural issues here. And it's everything that I've always disliked about Abrams just ramped up to the nines. That I really feel this guy is just a pillager of earlier works. He is fixated on the 80s cinema, has always just wanted to be that guy, but he's like the third rate version of all those guys. He wants to make a Star Wars film. Well, you know what? So did the guys who made Ice Pirates.
I don't feel that here. I feel like this is an example of, like, say, Quentin Tarantino when he had the great editor in his early days. And it was you have a lot of strengths, but if you don't have anybody there to say, no, you can't do that, and here's why, you're going to make a big mess. Here is the difference. And this is a film where Abrams finally has the right people around him to say, you have a lot of strengths, let's play to those strengths, but you need people to tell you, no, this doesn't make sense, and here's why. I think this is unquestionably to me, his best film for that reason. By the way, I don't remember seeing a single lens flare because I know someone's going to ask.
Right.
I know that's neither here nor there.
Lawrence Kasdan that person? Because Lawrence Kasdan co-wrote...
I suspect Kathleen Kennedy is that person.
Some of the original movies, one of them, or all of them.
Yeah, Kasdan also wrote Dreamcatcher. Have you seen...
He's familiar with the characters.
Yeah, but you love George Lucas, and George Lucas also wrote Howard the Duck.
Which I'm not going to say is a great film by the
Fantasy Imagination. But the difference is that
whatever you say about the prequels, they had a sense of vision. I don't sense any vision about this. I just sense this is a guy who has been accelerated into a position because he is a safe pair of hands in the studio system, and you know, he knows how technically to put a film together, but I see nothing here. I think this is a hollow, hollow experience for me, and I spent the entire film just going, yeah, you're just a remix artist. I'm more optimistic. Like, and this isn't, I don't want to see these films be successful. I do want to see these films successful. Frankly, I could not be happier that Rian Johnson is taking over for the next film, because I think Rian Johnson is a phenomenal director.
I'm actually super excited that there's going to be a different director for every
but
film.
But I think J.J. Abrams, you know, everything that I despise about him as a director and what he does in the studio system, just exemplified in this picture. And there are so many things where if you sit back for 2 seconds and go, what? Wait, who is this person? Right. Why, and why do they appear and then disappear with no reference or no explanation?
Directly attacking J.J. Abrams and his thing and get into...
Let me say the good things. Yeah, well, hold on. Harrison Ford is amazing.
It's been dying to retort something.
Well, the challenge of this whole thing is that, to me, I would say I agree with you that... excuse me, I'm sorry. there are a lot of callbacks to A New Hope, especially.
And to Empire.
And that's going to be something that I think even a casual watcher
or viewer...
to the
extended universe.
Like, there'll be those criticisms. And I would say I agree with you there, but they didn't negatively impact me. Like, I enjoyed them. But I think the problem is that a lot of the new ground that he does tread is what are the spoilers and what we can't really talk about here until all the world has seen it.
Yeah,
I thought he took it in some bold, interesting directions. I mean, maybe it's just directions that were inevitable because of the nature of serial storytelling and all that stuff, but I thought there was exciting new stuff, new ground tread that we can't really get into here, but kind of even ballsy, maybe, especially when you have all those people looking over shoulders and, you know, there was some real bold developments that I think people will be arguing about for years to come.
Well, and there's definitely people who are going to say right off the bat, I really enjoyed it until a certain point in like the last act. And I personally thought that certain point, the big, you know, really the expected, admittedly, but dramatic centerpiece, the tragic moment of the film, was earned because they had the right kind of nobility for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought, while I was watching it, even, I was thinking about Star Trek Generations and going, this is why this works, and the end of Star Trek Generations didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a noble death.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not.
Whereas I didn't think that was earned at all, because not least because there is a core revelation that sets that up that is so cack-handedly dealt with. And it's just this tossed away line, and you're like, do you know how to structure a script with any dramatic tension?
And it is really hard to review this movie without spoilers.
No. but there is. I'm just saying that because
I didn't know specifically what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so. But it's really just dropped, and you just go, well, you don't know how to structure narrative. Like, and that was, there was moments where I'm like, this really just feels like characters are wandering in and out. You know, I really wanted John Boyega to be given a better script than this, because I know how fucking good he is.
Oh, I thought he was so good.
Yeah,
he's
better than this. He's better than what he was given.
Sure.
The film came alive.
I don't think it's his strongest work.
No.
The
film came alive in the moments with Han and Leia, which are phenomenal. Mainly because, weirdly... because when you watch it, and this is one of the strangest fucking things about this whole film, Harrison Ford is great. Carrie Fisher's physical acting is great, but she delivered everything through weirdly gritted teeth and does not move her mouth, and it is the strangest decision.
I noticed that
as well.
And I
was like, and also she forgot how Leia enunciates, which really was kind of a weird, like, when Harrison Ford really had put the groundwork in to bring Han back.
Yeah.
And you felt like she'd done
the
work.
Really brought Han
Ford
back.
Ford is by far the best thing about this film.
Oh, I mean, he put the work in, which is weird to say about a guy who spends that much of his life getting high, like, to make sure that Han feels exactly like Han. Whereas I agree with you, Carrie Fisher, like, she didn't even put in the work to sound like... Or move her mouth in the right way.
She looks like she was very well ADR'd.
I mean, I agree. Like, you have to, like, to some extent, I go, like, there was that point, like, in her life where clearly her voice dropped about, like, at menopause by a significant...
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
And or through cocaine. I don't know what did it, but you know what I mean? That point where suddenly her voice hit this... she sounded nothing like herself anymore, which is not totally uncommon, but... She didn't try to even do that kind of pseudo-British thing.
Yeah, also, like, just revisiting the original trilogy this past weekend, like, Harrison Ford just stands out in that whole trilogy. Like,
of course he does.
He's Harrison Ford. Actually, I feel like Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher came off this view around, for me, quite well, better than when I was younger, but you see Harrison Ford, and man, that guy is just a superstar. And recently, obviously, we haven't really seen that Harrison Ford for a long time. And he was definitely back. I think some people have said that about whatever, the last Indiana Jones or whatever, that he woke up, but this one, he was
dead on
there. And I don't know that there's going to be a
Chewie's
lot of...
Chewie's accent was a little off.
Yeah. I mean, you know. He hasn't gotten a lot of work recently either, so...
let's get into final thoughts, guys, to bring it down. Ed, why don't you start?
Sure, yeah. Like I said, I was really swept away by this. And I will say, I'm not going to say anything about what the opening crawl sort of reveals, but that opening crawl just... It hit me that this is exactly the story that I want to hear. I'm not the guy who ever read the books and the extended universe novelization, so I wasn't splitting hairs about, well, I wonder if this is going to be like that or anything. And I've never even really honestly pondered that much, what do I want this story to be? I just was cautiously optimistic and just letting it come. And when that opening crawl started, I was like, wow, this is exactly the story I want. And interestingly, it then kind of cuts to not that story for a long time. Like we said, it sort of introduces us to that younger cast.
Which I thought it had to.
Right? Yeah. And right away, I feel like something we didn't really get around to is just the energy and the performance of that younger cast. I mean, I thought they were all good. I thought Adam Driver was fantastic.
We didn't even mention Adam Driver.
I thought he was actually fantastic. I mean,
of the three major new characters, he was my least favorite, but I still thought he did a good job.
That's fair. Yeah. I think Daisy Ridley was great, and she's like a total... I hadn't seen her ever before in anything, so she was just like a complete blank slate for me, and I was invested in her right away. And John Boyega to just, oh, and Oscar Isaac even as well. You know, there's a lot of this new, younger kind of cast. And I don't know if it was just, I also felt like I was in Star Wars world again. And, you know, we didn't really touch on the prequels anything almost at all yet either. But the prequels were just so very aesthetically different. And regardless of whether they're awful or whether you love them or they were the movies you grew up with, they're completely different aesthetically, and this is much more that original trilogy aesthetic. And I guess
that's my appeal as well. Mm-hmm. That this felt like the feel of the first films, right, and the prequels did not.
So sure, maybe there's a degree of retread or like, hey, this is Jakku instead of Tatooine. Didn't bother me because I was just so happy to be back in like the universe that felt like the
universe.
And just the very sequelness of this movie. I mean, we've seen a million video games and cartoons and stuff set in between various chapters of the story, and we've seen these prequels, but nothing has been like a sequel. I guess there are those novels, but I never read those.
Actually, the Timothy Zahn trilogy is amazing.
I'd like to read them someday. So and I could
Richard,
still,
am I right?
Yes.
I'd still happily read them, and I could hold those.
Oh, no, well, you'd like to, but Marvel have made sure those things aren't in print anymore because, you know.
Honestly, if you go to any half-price books,
yeah,
like
I can
four.
Dig
Oh, no,
up.
No,
I
because now, now everybody's picking them up as fast
oh,
as possible.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah,
oh,
they're
well,
going faster.
Anyway, so, you know, what I'm getting at is that, you know, I was immediately taken back to that sort of, sure, it's maybe nostalgia, but that's just only takes you so far. And that first chunk I was nostalgic, but I was also, you know, hooked in by the new blood, and I thought their performances were great. And then I do think that the stuff that we can't really talk about, the sort of developments, have me really hooked. And what I think is a cool thing about J.J. Abrams, his whole mystery box thing is rarely successful in the payoff. It's it's a whole bunch of, you know, upfront secret spinning and hiding and all that. But I think this time there were some really exciting developments, and he answered a lot of questions in this movie. By the end of this movie, you will know a lot of things that you've always wanted to, that you've been curious about for months or years. And then there's a whole bunch of new mysteries that you won't know the answer to. And I'm excited to be a part of that new generation that just, and I'm also not going to know what happens for another 2 years, you know, and we're all going to be sitting around waiting. And I was just the right age where growing up with, I always knew the whole trilogy. I was born in 80, so I never like saw the first movie and was wondering. And I always knew the big twists of the whole, of the original trilogy. And so I'm excited to be just waiting around for the new twists of this new trilogy. So I loved it. I'm going to go, one other thing before I do my little rating. Sorry. The Force is back to being a mysterious, freakish religion that nobody knows anything about instead of, you know, armies of people running around
instead
with lightsabers.
Lots of, way too many details about how it works.
Yeah, exactly. It's a mysterious, like, sort of freakish religion again, and I love that, and I think that's a huge plus for this movie. So I'm going to give it like a rock solid 9 out of 10 wistful nerd tears.
Richard. Counterpoint, I should have said.
Yeah.
I said my piece on this to a certain degree because this is, you know, oh, look, you know, J.J. Abrams does the cantina scene. Oh, look. Here's your trench run. Oh, look, here's Wedge. Oh, look, here's Hoth. It's everything. It's all those things. It's just nothing. This is meaningless. And you talk about the aesthetic. You know, that's the worst aspect of this whole fan service, high-budget fan film debacle for me. is the aesthetic hasn't changed one bit. And whether you love the prequels, which I do, or you hate them, what was wonderful about them was that they went, this is an evolving world. And it, this isn't. This is just, oh, look, I'm going to take that little bit of set dressing and put it back in place. I mean, the effects work is good. But then again, you throw 200 million at a film at this point in the history of the world and your effects work isn't good, then fine. I just never feel that he gets it. I don't feel that there's anything of the epic nature of storytelling and of cycles and of the hero's journey that was always core to what Lucas was doing from day one. None of that's there. It's flat. It's meaningless. When you have what are supposed to be big emotional payoffs, I'm just sat there going, well, I know where you're going. Everything here is so telegraphed because he doesn't know how to do anything new or novel or innovative. He just takes what other people have done before and glues them together. In many ways, what this does is show the strengths of Lucas as a director and as a storyteller. And it just shows, you know, all those people who think they got what it was he was doing. Just didn't. They didn't get it. And Lucas, I think, summed it up when he was asked about, you know, what this film was like, and he said, well, I liked it, which was him being, I think, very diplomatic. Audiences will love it. And I think audiences are going to love it. I just think it's not a particularly healthy state of cinema that audiences love this when, you know, you could do something daring and challenging. I think they are doing something daring and challenging by letting Rian Johnson loose with it, which I'm excited by 8. But this is exactly what I thought it was going to be. This is all the problems that I see with this cadre, with Kasdan as a writer for the last 25 years, because I've seen his films for the last 25 years, and the scripts were not good. It's Kathleen Kennedy and the Mucky Mucks at Disney, who are the worst of the Mucky Mucks at Disney. These are not the people that have given Marvel its head. These are the control freaks. There is talent here, but there's so much that it's clumsy, clodhopping, graceless, and merely taken from elsewhere that this will be a low point in the series for me, and it really will. I think they should take the number 7 off it and make this an anthology film, because it doesn't sit with the other 6 at all in any stretch of the imagination. This is like an Elseworld Star Wars by a third-rate writer. This is 4 bad motivators out of 10.
That was perfect, though, for your choice of arbitrary rating system.
Thank you.
Obviously, I disagree.
No, you've done it before.
Yeah, it's all right.
That's the joy of the show, folks.
It's funny you say, like, it feels like it hasn't evolved in the right way. Like, my problem with the prequels is it felt like it devolved to a cartoon show. It did not feel like the Star Wars universe in any way, shape, or form. It felt like those felt like badly made fan films to me. And that was my problem. This feels like the film I expected to see next. It feels like that universe. It touches on things that are definitely fan service. I'm not going to disagree with you there, but it doesn't hover over them going, the way, say, Star Trek Into Darkness did. It uses them to make it feel organic inside of that world that already exists. It felt like the natural progression of this story, and I love that about it. I was very cynical going into this. I was cynical for a period into this, but there was that point that I just gave up, like, trying so hard to be critical watching it. I just gave up because I was like, I'm with you. I'm having so much fun. This is what if they had kept making the movies or whatever, the 18-year-old me would have wanted to see the story go on to. You know, it was like, yes, this is awesome. This is great. This is the same sense of like you said, that mysticism of the Force, that idea that no one really understands it, but then at the same time, it feels like it's careening out of control. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. There's a lot of stuff with Kylo Ren where he's so powerful that he can't even control it. Right. He's not even good at it. He's just wildly powerful. And on the other hand of that, you have Rey, who's also ridiculously more powerful than anybody we've seen before, but has a sort of innate way of grokking it better than he seems to. Mm-hmm. And I found that aspect of it so fascinating in the, wow, I can't wait to see what happens next aspect of this. This really swept me away with it. I did think there was some super awkward moments with dialogue here and there, but once again, you know, they all have some super awkward mm-hmm. moments of dialogue. Even Empire has some awkward dialogue moments. And, you know, I guess I just... this is the only film since Return of the Jedi that really made me feel like the kid who was watching the original films again. I really loved this, and I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 moments that in the film that I wondered, where the fuck is Mark Hamill? Richard, I want to thank you for especially for coming into this, because I knew that you knew... You were coming into an antagonistic environment.
It's what you do. Like, that's what reviewing is. I mean, you're always going to be in this position. But, you know, I get that you guys liked it.
And there are other people out there who agree with you, and I've seen them. Who are like, yes, this did not work for me at all. And I think it's great that we have a chance to offer both sides of this thing.
Hooray for us! This is why oneofus.net is great. And this is why you should become a subscriber.
Wow, look at him.
Also, folks, you know, if you do know any of the reviewers, we are getting towards Christmas. Find their Amazon wish list and send them something, because you know, we have so many people who do put in an incredible amount of work on the site.
Agreed.
If you go, hey, you know what? You know, Bo or you know, Ashley or
I would rather you guys JC. Buy them something on their Amazon wish list than buy me something. Because I always get people, what are your Amazon wish list? And I was like, that is so sweet. And I do genuinely appreciate it. Those guys put in a shit ton of work, and Richard Whitaker as well, for free. Yeah. So I would like
I'll go home and update the wish list now.
There you go. We will be returning with a. Probably 2-hour fucking review, because there'll be 10 people in the room in the sometime middle to late next week. But anyway, thanks for listening, and you know what? Just make up your own fucking minds.